This is episode number 262 of the Fearless Presentations Podcast, the fastest, easiest way to eliminate public speaking fear.
Want to absolutely eliminate public speaking fear? This podcast is the answer. Here's the guy who literally wrote the book on fearless presentations, Doug Stannard.
Hey, welcome to Fearless Presentations. I'm Doug Stannard, CEO of the Leaders Institute, and my goal is to help you become a fearless and confident speaker and presenter. A couple of weeks ago, I started a series on how to get paid to speak, and I mentioned that a professional speaker is basically just somebody who gets paid a fee to give a presentation. So teachers, trial attorneys, salespeople, and really any supervisor or manager who leads internal presentations are actually professional speakers. They all deliver information in presentations or in briefings that their audience needs in order to solve a problem, but almost all of those people give away that information for free. So in this series, I'm showing you how that the information that you have is very valuable, and by just changing a few things, you can actually build up your credibility as an expert to generate additional streams of income. And last week, I gave you a five-step process to create good content to speak about. This week, I'm going to show you I'm basically going to back up just a little bit and kind of show you how to identify what to actually speak about if you really want to get paid to speak. By the way, if you're enjoying the episodes, I need a favor from you. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave me a review wherever you download the podcast, whatever app you use. Your subscriptions, your downloads, those reviews especially, they kind of help us keep the content of the show free because it allows us to get a bigger audience. By the way, the episode is sponsored by Fearless Presentations. So if you're looking for a faster way to reduce public speaking fear or become a more persuasive speaker, we've got two-day public speaking classes coming up in Tampa, Phoenix, Charlotte, St. Louis, Chicago, Las Vegas, Cincinnati, New York, Indianapolis, Philadelphia, and Dallas. So for details about those or any of our other classes, just go to fearlesspresentations.com. All right, so let's get on with today's session. So in this session, we're going to continue with the last couple of sessions that I did about how to get paid to speak. And on today's session, I'm going to show you how to actually identify what to speak about. If you really want to make a fortune speaking for a living, you can't get paid to speak. In fact, you can make a fortune speaking for a living. You just need to do a few things. So first, whatever it is that you're going to speak about, you need to solve a difficult problem for your audience. Second, you got to catalog your knowledge about that solution and then repurpose your content so that you can collect money for it. And then finally, you have to kind of position yourself as the go-to expert on that topic. So in this episode, I'm going to go through each one of those three steps, step by step. But before I get started, let's kind of recap what I covered in the last couple of sessions. So don't get hung up on the term professional speaker. A professional speaker is just somebody who receives a fee or a salary sometimes when he or she stands up to speak. So an elementary school teacher is a professional speaker. So is a trial attorney. So is a military officer who gives briefings. All of those speakers give presentations. However, almost all of those professional speakers actually give their knowledge away for free. So in this session, I'm going to show you the step-by-step process of how you can actually collect income from that knowledge that you have. So before I get into those three things, though, let me kind of give you a little bit of additional background. I kind of mentioned a couple of episodes ago about going to the business seminar with my dad back when I was in college, or I think I just graduated from college. Let me kind of go into more detail about that, because if you kind of understand what I kind of noticed at that time, it kind of explains a little bit more about how or why people would actually pay a speaker to get up in front of a group and speak. So this was just about the time I was graduating from college. My dad invited me to a business conference. It was actually in Fort Worth, Texas, and dozens of speakers were on the agenda, and the topics were designed to really help small business owners grow their companies. And I wasn't really sure what to expect when my dad invited me to this thing. In fact, I assumed that the meetings would be really, really boring, you know, because I'd been in college for a few years by that point, and everything that I'd been through in college was pretty boring. But my dad kind of convinced me that it would be worth my while. So when I walked into that convention center, though, I was amazed, especially the morning of the opening session. There were about 10,000 people in the audience, and the agenda was just packed with professional speakers. So at the time, I had no idea that anybody could actually make a living speaking in front of a group. So this was a kind of a whole new world for me. One of the speakers that day was a guy named Bob Berg, who had just released his best-selling book. It was called Endless Referrals. That's how old I am. That's how long it was ago before when I was in college. It had just been released. And basically after Bob spoke, he was actually out at his table, you know, out in the lobby, autographing books and that kind of thing. And I actually got a chance to stop by the booth and chat with him for a few minutes. Really nice guy and everything. And I remember asking my dad at the end of that first day, "Hey, that guy Bob who spoke about networking, what does he actually do for a living?" And my dad kind of looked at me and he said, "Well, I guess he just speaks now." And I went, "I mean, how does he make money though? How does he live? How does he generate income?" And my dad kind of laughed and he said, "I'm pretty sure that he probably makes good money from his books and his recorded seminars, that kind of thing. But I'd bet that he makes most of his income just by going up on stage and speaking." And at that point, I didn't understand what my dad was telling me, but the concept of making money speaking was actually too foreign for me. But that incident actually opened up a whole new world to me, because speaking is a great potential profession for a lot of people. So again, so I just graduated from college. So I knew that the best way to make a living was to go and get a job for a really big company and then work like a dog for 30 years at that company and then retire in generating wealth by just standing up on stage and speaking would be a ridiculous, impossible way to actually make a living. And it's amazing how certain instances in your life can actually be life-changing for you, though, because that conversation with my dad started me down a road that has allowed me to help hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people eliminate public speaking fear and increase their income at the same time. So yes, most of those professional speakers made a small fortune just speaking. However, they also made an additional fortune by selling their knowledge to audiences in different formats. By the way, motivational speakers get the most media in the industry, but in all fairness, very few professional speakers ever actually get paid just to stand up on stage and motivate people. Some do, but it's a really, really small percentage of the group of people who get paid to speak. In fact, most professional speakers are actually teachers. So if you have knowledge that is valuable to your profession, people will actually pay you to give them that knowledge. It helps shorten their learning curve, but only if that knowledge can actually solve the problem, and more importantly, only as long as that knowledge continues to solve that problem. For instance, when my wife and I bought our house, the guy that we bought the house from left us a checklist for the pool. It's the first time we'd ever owned a pool. We've always wanted to own a pool and finally got the big house that had the pool in the backyard. And he kind of left us a checklist. It was a simple set of instructions on what to do to keep the pool in order. And most of them were like weekly tasks, you know, things like empty the skimmers and sweep the steps and that kind of stuff. However, one of the tasks on the list was to clean the filter. And since this was my first time ever owning a pool, I had no idea how to clean a pool filter. I didn't even know what it looked like or where it was or anything like that. So I did what most people do today. I searched on Google, basically, how do you clean a pool filter? And the top result was a video from Leslie's Pools. And by the way, it's still there. If you do a search for how to clean a pool filter, it's going to be the top thing that shows up. And it's a video about how to clean the filter. Now, I had a problem. The teacher on the Leslie video had my solution. And as a result, I was willing to pay Leslie's for their help and all of my other pool needs. So when I needed to get a new filter, that's where I bought it from, right? Because they had set themselves up as being the expert. So if you want to get paid to speak, you really need to spend time figuring out what problems your audiences face. So the key thing here is that the bigger the problem you solve, the more you can collect from speaking about that thing. So spend some time kind of putting yourself in the shoes of your audience member. What challenges do they face? What problems do they have? These challenges and problems should be crystal clear before you ever start designing your first speech. Otherwise, you're going to get frustrated when nobody wants to pay you for a solution to a problem that nobody has, right? So for instance, let's say that you're a really good salesperson who wants to speak about increasing sales. Well, most salespeople that do this want to go into training or into speaking, they typically pick a general problem like closing more deals or increasing sales. And by the way, everybody wants to close more deals, right? And everybody wants to increase sales. So those should be very valuable topics to speak about, right? Well, not really, because those problems are really too general. They don't really have enough what I call pain associated with them. So instead, you've got to ask what problems your potential audience members might have about sales or about closing deals. So if I'm putting myself in the shoes of that person in the audience, the problem that I might see most consistently is that my sales tend to stall when I send out my proposal with the price, right? So I'm getting that price objection. Or it could be that we spend a lot of money on advertising to get new customers, but don't get enough customers to actually pay for the ads that we're using. Or it could be when we innovate our process, our competitors just copy what we do. Any of those three things could be something that a potential audience member might be dealing with. And once we have the specific problem, now we can create better topics and better solutions for those problems. So the topics that we might come up with to solve these problems might be something like overcoming the price objection to sell higher priced items to prospects. So if I'm a person that has that problem where I'm sending out my proposals and I'm not getting any contact after they know what my price is, then okay, that's a topic that might help me solve that problem. Or my topic might be cut your advertising cost and still get new customers. So if I'm spending a lot of money for advertising, not getting new customers, that's a solution to that problem that I'm facing. Or the other one might be how to differentiate your products from competitor copycats. So each of these topics actually solves a specific problem for each of those audiences. So the audience is more likely now to pay for that solution if the pain that they're experiencing because of that problem is big enough. So once you identify what that specific need is, you need to develop your content based on what your audience actually needs. So a lot of teachers and trainers develop their sessions by just focusing on what the quote unquote lesson plan says to cover, right? So I remember taking business accounting in college, and actually I don't remember anything about that class, but I do remember that it was incredibly boring, but I wish that professor had made the content more in tune with what I need today to run my business. That the professor tried to teach us everything that a full-time accountant would need to know. However, he never really showed us how those calculations translated into real world results. So he never showed us the solution to the problem. So as a business owner now, I understand more about why many of those items were covered in that class. But back then, no one ever explained those things to me or why I needed to know each one of those calculations. So for instance, like in stuff that we teach today, like when I'm teaching a Fearless Presentations class, I'll sometimes add in the session about analogies or adding analogies into your presentation. I'll start with a statement like, sooner or later, you're going to be delivering a presentation that is really complex or really technical. And while you're giving that technical presentation, you're going to look out at your audience and see a bunch of blank and confused faces. And that is the perfect time to pull out an analogy. So we're explaining the problem first, then getting the audience to see that they've experienced that problem or may experience that problem in the future, and then we give them the solution. So when you're creating your content, you want to do this as well. Put yourself in the shoes of the people who you're going to be presenting to. What challenges, what problems do they have? And then explain to them very clearly how your solution will help them solve that problem or solve that challenge. So the second step, the second thing that you want to do is catalog your knowledge and then repurpose your content. And once you do that, you can collect money for it. So for instance, the most important lesson that I learned, and it was way too late, was that you only have so much time in your day. So when you trade your time for dollars, you're going to eventually reach a point where your income is going to top out. For me, I hit this first wall when I was a contract trainer for a big training company. I was a really good salesperson, and I was also a really good instructor. However, I had to split my time between finding new customers and then actually teaching classes for those customers. So if I had an intense teaching schedule, no one was back at the office working on developing new clients. So I'd have these huge kind of peaks and then troughs of income. So eventually I hired a sales assistant, and she was able to do a lot of the selling process while I was teaching. And within a short time, my income actually doubled. And then just like before, once my income kind of doubled, it plateaued again. So my income increased because I was now trading my time and my assistant's time for dollars. So just like before, once we ran out of time, once she and I both ran out of time, there was only so much that each one of us could cram into a week, the income topped again. So the same identical thing happened to me again when I started my company, the Leaders Institute. There was only so many hours that I could teach each week. So I started bringing on instructors and training them to do what I do. And the company grew like gangbusters. And then we hit a peak. We hit this plateau where we couldn't get over. We'd been growing so fast, and all of a sudden it just kind of stagnated. And what I had done was I just added additional people on staff who could trade time for dollars. And of course, then they ran out of hours in the week as well. And so I just hit another plateau. It was just at a higher level than what it was when it was just me by myself. So if you kind of understand that concept by cataloging your content, it helps you create additional streams of income to supplement your speaking fees. So I mentioned this challenge that I had this plateau occurring, and I'd been in business for quite a few years at this point, and I kind of mentioned the challenge that I had to a friend of mine who was also a speaker. And the first thing he asked me, was how much income is your product sales? And I squirmed a little when he said that to me, because at that point, almost 100% of my company's income was based on either me going out and teaching something in person or one of my instructors going out and teaching something in person. And my friend's jaw hung in the air for about a moment. It gaped open or gapped open. He said, "Wait, you're making that kind of money just off of speaking?" And what was funny was at the time, I just assumed that every speaker did. You know, my friend said, how many people come to your website who really want to attend one of your public speaking classes, but live in a city where you don't have one scheduled?" And I was guessing, but I said, "It's got to be, you know, tens of thousands probably every month." And he said, "Get a videographer, go record one of your classes and offer an online version of the class to those people." And within a couple of months, we had generated an entirely new income stream. And this one didn't depend on trading time for dollars, because once we had done the work, the income came in every month, no matter what. We basically already created the course. So as long as somebody wanted that version of the course, we made a profit off of it. The other thing that you can do is by repurposing your knowledge. You want to find additional ways to create income from the work that you've already done. So that discussion that I had with my friend actually changed my outlook entirely about generating income from speakings, because my friend was teaching me how to repurpose my content. You know, some people don't like to go to seminars, so give them an online version of the class. Some people don't like to sit at a computer and learn, so create a podcast with an audio of the class. That way, the person can listen while exercising or doing housework or something like that. When we write blogs now, we also look for ways to turn that blog into YouTube videos of the content, and then we export the audio from that video and create a podcast. So in addition, instead of just kind of putting text in the blogs, we now use content to create infographics and that kind of thing. So the point is that the knowledge that you have in your head is very valuable. So you want to find ways to share that content with people who need it. And then you're going to, and then you have to find ways to repurpose that content to reach a bigger audience. So, okay. So once you kind of do those two things, finally, the third step is you have to position yourself as the go-to expert on your topic. About 2 years after I started my company, I was speaking at a chamber of commerce meeting, and an area manager for a big financial planning company offered me a job on the spot. I was kind of shocked because I didn't know who this guy was. I didn't recognize him. And apparently he knew me because he told me that he had heard me speak maybe three times over the last year. And he seemed to be impressed with me. And this was still early in my speaking career. So the offer was very tempting. So he wanted to hold these big financial planning seminars and then have me as the main speaker on stage. And his thought was that I could build rapport with those potential customers who his salespeople invited to the seminar. And then he could have his salespeople actually close the deal with the audience members. And I kind of had to explain to him that although I was honored by the offer, I didn't think that the plan would actually work. And the first reason, by the way, was that the topics that I speak about are those topics that I'm an expert on. The reason why people have me speak on public speaking fear and leadership development and building solid teams is that I have both studied those topics in depth for an extended period of time, or I have firsthand real world experience in each one of those things. And at the time, I knew nothing about financial planning. So that would be a big hurdle for me being his speaker. And then the second, and this one was really the more important one, was that if I do become an expert at financial planning and I present the ideas effectively to that audience, the audience is going to see me as the expert. The moment that we send other salespeople in to follow up with those audience members, there's going to be a dramatic disconnect. That the trust level is not going to be there. And he didn't feel comfortable enough to have any of his current salespeople conduct that seminar. So why on earth would he be comfortable with them speaking to potential clients at all, right? So I suggested that he have me train his salespeople, and then that way any one of them could get up and lead the seminar and build that trust with the audience and that kind of thing. So and that technique actually worked really, really well. So one of the questions that I often get asked at this point, though, is, okay, I feel like I'm an expert on my industry, Doug, but my topic is really boring. My industry is really, really boring. How do I generate income from a topic like that? Well, the knowledge that you have about your current industry is way, 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 way more valuable to the marketplace than a motivational speech. You know, a lot of times people want to be a motivational speaker because it's more exciting and it's more interesting and that kind of thing. Typically, the knowledge you have about your industry is going to be way more valuable to the audience. So industry experts, they're in high demand, and almost all of them get paid more than even the best motivational speakers. I'll give you an example. I did a session with a corrugated box company here in Fort Worth years ago, and they wanted to revise their mission statement because of changes in the marketplace. They had a change in leadership, that kind of thing. And they just wanted to kind of go back in and recreate the company from scratch. And their original mission statement had something to do with being the best corrugated box company in the world or something like that. So the problem, though, was that their market was shrinking considerably. The more that they thought of themselves as being a quote-unquote corrugated box company, the less growth they actually experienced because there were fewer companies needing corrugated boxes, right? So in the meeting that we had about developing this mission statement, all the executives were in the room, and I asked, you know, what was it that they really did? And they all kind of answered in unison, "We make boxes." And I asked them again, "No, what do you really help your customers do? What problem do you solve for your customers?" And of course, the answer was, "Well, we help them solve the problem of using boxes," right? So, and I think I must have asked that question probably seven times before it dawned on one of the executives what I was really asking them. And the breakthrough didn't actually come until we started thinking about a specific client. So for instance, their main customer was Levi's. So I asked, why does Levi's buy boxes from you? What do your boxes or any boxes allow Levi's to do more easily? And basically, at that point, the penny kind of dropped because they realized for the first time that they weren't actually in the box business. They were in the transportation and logistics business. The corrugated boxes were just one way for them to provide these services to their customers. So once we came to this conclusion, the mission statement changed significantly. If all the company ever did was just sell boxes and the number of companies buying boxes shrinks, then they're going to automatically lose, right? Well, every once in a while, they're going to lose a client through attrition and they're going to get smaller and smaller and smaller. It's going to be a dying company. However, if we solve logistics and transportation challenges for the clients, now we can now solve additional challenges for that client that we may have never even anticipated before. So basically, once they kind of understood this, the salespeople began to change their questions to their clients and their potential clients. So instead of, do you want to buy more corrugated boxes? They would say something like, hey, so when you ship your products, what are some of the most important challenges that you're dealing with? And the salespeople move from being box peddlers to trusted consultants. The knowledge that each one of these trusted consultants had acquired in a short period of time became very valuable. The more that they cataloged that experience in white papers and videos and how-to seminars, the more income that the company began to generate. So if you want to get paid to speak, basically you want to follow these really three simple little steps. Solve a problem for the marketplace, catalog your expertise into blog posts, books, videos, podcasts, that kind of thing, and then position yourself as the expert in the industry. And once you do, you'll be able to charge a premium fee for those solutions. So before you set off to become the next Zig Ziglar or Tony Robbins or any of those other famous motivational speakers, think about becoming a speaker about what you already know inside and out, your current industry. And if you do, you'll be able to generate a lot of income from it. All right. So thanks a lot for being a part of Fearless Presentations. We'll see you next week. Bye, y'all.
Subscribe to this podcast for new public speaking secrets each week.